Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Ladies and gentlemen, I've been waiting for this interview for a long, long time.
That's correct.
The myth, the legend, David Gloatz, the man they call Mr. Bike, the man who also chronicles for the Ben Jarofsky Show, the antics of the Chicago City Council is here. Yes, indeed. He's our correspondent. He's our paid City Council correspondent.
Your check's in the mail, right?
Paid by whom?
We sent you the check.
You didn't get it? Man, you
got the cataract.
Did I spell Gloatz wrong?
I think you did. All right, so... we've been promoting, Dave, this segment for a while. Dave and I talked about it last week. Let me just do a preamble, and we'll get right to it. Dave's going to take us through this as he's done. I think this is the fourth time we've done this. So anyway, last week, the Chicago City Council faced a monumental decision. Should they relinquish their oversight authority, their legislatively mandated authority, to approve budgets and expenditures, should they give that authority over to Mayor Lori Lightfoot in the pandemic? In other words, is this such a public health crisis that the city has to blow up whatever semblance we have of legislative check on the executive branch of government and just allow the mayor until when? Some point in June. I can't remember the exact rescission date.
June 30th.
Until June 30th, have authority over
Or sooner.
What's that?
Or sooner if the Commissioner of Public Health decides.
Yes, or sooner. I'll bet you anything you want in Vegas, they'll never exercise the and sooner part. So should they give up their authority to the mayor? Is this crisis so dangerous that they had to do so? There were two meetings on this subject last week, virtual city council meetings. They were Zoom. City council loves Zoom.
No, Ben loves Zoom.
Dr. Howard Ehrman really loves Zoom. Ben, we're going to Zoom this interview. So they had a virtual meeting, two of them. And the meetings were going on while I was on the air, but Dave Gloatz was dutifully following them, and he's put together a montage of clips of the aldermen saying this, that, and the other thing, and the mayor saying this, that, and the other thing. We're going to analyze them and come to a decision as to whether it was warranted. Just so you know, Dave, I know you know this, but I'm going to say this. I've had this, this will be the third time I've discussed this at length on the show, and I've already made it clear, I wrote a column on this, that if I were an alderman, I would have voted no, not to give the mayor that authority. I have been outvoted on my own show. All right, Dave? I've had two guests.
However, you had many more people voting with you than you normally would have, namely 21.
Yes.
Other than, which is many more than usually vote against a mayoral initiative.
Yes. And for our listeners from out of Chicago, I urge you to stay with us in this. I know we're not going to really get into Donald Trump in this thing. It's a local show. I've been covering Chicago politics since the 1980s. Dave Gloatz has been covering Chicago politics at least since the early part of the 21st century. So it's two Chicago political geeks really taking the deep dive on Chicago politics and the way our bizarre system of government goes down here in the city of Chicago. So I think that's enough of a preamble. Dave, why don't you take it away?
This thing that we're talking about is actually an ordinance that was passed by the City Council on April 24th. And this thing, let's call it the Emergency Powers Ordinance, which the Mayor Lori Lightfoot was looking to get passed by the council. And what it does is it gives her department heads pretty much unprecedented emergency powers to address the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic that has us talking on the phone rather than in person. And the ordinance gives the mayor's department heads several powers. One is to reallocate funds within the city's 2020 budget. Another thing it does is it lets the city enter into pandemic-related contracts of up to $1 million without the city council, again, approving. Here's an interesting one. It lets the city, well, it empowers the city to lease and occupy property and indemnifying the property owners from any kind of liability, like if somebody wants to sue them for, you know, tripping or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an interesting one. I wonder if anybody's going to take the city up on that one in terms of lawsuits.
Wait, now, time out. What is it? One more time, run that by me.
So normally when the city leases, say, you know, leases, I don't know, McCormick Place, you know, the owner of the property is required to have liability insurance. So if somebody were to fall and break their leg, they wouldn't sue the city, or if they sued the city, because people can sue whoever they want, right? The property owner would have liability insurance so that settlements or damages would be covered. This ordinance lets the city, it says, you know what, property owners, we're going to let that slide for pandemic-related leases or occupations of property. So that's an interesting one.
Mm. So, in other words, the city would be on the hook.
Yep.
Okay.
And then another thing it does is that normally when city contractors enter into a contract, before they enter into a contract, they have to file what's called an economic disclosure statement that says they have these cousins who are related to city department heads, you know, things like that, mm-hmm. that shows, you know, possible conflicts of interest. And this ordinance allows vendors to not submit those at time of contract, but to wait up to 2 months before doing that. Again, just for pandemic-related contracts. And all these things, as you mentioned earlier, these powers for the administration are what they call self-repealing by June 30th, or when the city's public health commissioner, I'll quote from the ordinance, quote, makes, which I have right here, which, quote, makes a written determination that the threat to public health posed by the COVID-19 virus has diminished, unquote, sufficiently, whichever comes soon, whether the commissioner says that or June 30th.
All right, I would say if I had to put money down in Vegas, there's a greater chance of the mayor asking the council to extend this executive authority as opposed to having the health commissioner cut it off. But we shall see, as they say. We shall see. All right.
And the mayor initially wasn't going to go to the council for these powers. She just kind of gave it to herself in March. You know about that, right?
I do. I talked about that in a column. I just wrote about this, but why don't you alert people to what went down. Go ahead.
Well, the ordinance does all these things that I just talked about. Well, the mayor actually gave herself the power to do all those things in an executive order that she issued on March 18th. And then evidently she decided it would be prudent to actually get it codified by ordinance rather than just giving herself the power to do it. And that's why we're having this conversation today. Otherwise, you know, she was just like, oh, good to go.
And the point I put out in my Reader column is I gave all the credit to young David Glowatz, because Dave wrote a story for the Reader, ran, I think, last week. I've lost track of time, Dave, and you were starting to research that story, and you were dutifully calling all the major players involved, the mayor's office, her aldermanic allies. And I think that's what triggered the notion that, yeah, maybe this would be a good idea to have the city council voluntarily relinquish these powers as opposed to me just grabbing them. Because, first of all, if she started doling out contracts, Dave, on the virtue of an executive order alone without having the city council officially given her that authority, I think there's very likely that somebody would have filed suit. saying she doesn't have the right to do this. And so then the very thing she says she wanted to accomplish, which is quick draw financing of, you know, various COVID-19 related gear or protective equipment, would have been
able to act quickly.
Yes, she would have been suddenly fight in a lawsuit. It would have undercut that. So that's why I gave all the credit to Dave Gloatz, because the decision, it seemed as though there was just a correlation between you're making those phone calls and the mayor just saying, maybe it's a good idea to have the city council approve the ordinance. Do you think I'm giving you too much credit?
Well, we don't know. I appreciate the credit, but we don't know. But we do know that when the press looks into things, that's what helps. Who said it? Was it a long ago senator, Proxmire? Maybe you remember who said this, but sunshine is a disinfectant when it comes to government.
You know, I think very good for Proxmire. William Proxmire, the Democratic senator from Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
He may have said that. Dave's being very modest on today's show. You should have heard him at the weekend. Yo, Ben, it was me who did it. You know that, don't you? No, just he did not do that, ladies and gentlemen. I did everything, man. I don't get any credit. No, he did not do that, okay? Sorry.
Well, let's talk about the ordinance.
All right, let's get down to business. Go ahead.
Well, the mayor, you mentioned a while ago that there were two meetings last week where this ordinance was proposed. When it was proposed by the mayor's office, it went through a couple meetings. It actually went through three meetings. There was a budget committee meeting on April 21st, which was pretty well attended. It was almost the entire city council. It was 34 committee members on the budget committee, plus I think 9 other non-committee members. And that was a marathon. That was a 4-hour budget committee meeting. And this was the only item on the agenda. So aldermen got to talk about why they agreed or disagreed with passing this ordinance and giving the mayor the power. And I think that there are two sort of main arguments that aldermen made about why they might not want to give this power away. And one is that sort of an equity ordinance. And in terms of the resources given to particular Chicago communities during the pandemic, aldermen wanted to make sure that when the city awarded contracts for the provision of equipment or for services to particular wards with large concentrations of people of color or low-income residents, aldermen wanted to make sure that those areas that were disproportionately affected by the COVID-19 virus got their fair share of resources, and they were loath to give license to the mayor to spend money however she wanted without that city council oversight. And there is nothing in the ordinance as it was passed that addresses that. So that was an issue. The second issue, sort of a bigger issue, is aldermen didn't want to lose appropriation authority, because currently controls around city government are such that the council has final say when it comes to large expenditures, namely hundreds of millions of dollars that are very possible with this pandemic. And the council doesn't want to lose oversight over that. So we're going to talk about, we're going to listen to some of the aldermen who talked during the, two other city council meetings after the budget committee meeting. There was a following day, the 22nd, was a scheduled city council meeting that was supposed to address the final passage of the ordinance. 5 aldermen got together and did a parliamentary maneuver that caused the mayor to recess the meeting till 2 days later when the ordinance did get passed. So we're going to listen to some aldermen who talked during the April 24th, the unrecessed meeting of the city council.
Okay.
You with me so far?
Yes, follow you. Everybody at home, just to help you out, the ultimate meeting where the matter was voted on was just this Friday of the 24th of April. There had been a meeting on Wednesday, April 22nd. The city council was supposed to vote on it then. And some of the aldermen pulled a parliamentary maneuver that forced the matter to be reconsidered at another meeting. And so they immediately have 48 hours. They had another meeting. This sort of undercutting the notion that you can't get quick action from the council on this. I'm just saying. Anyway, the final meeting, the final vote was Friday, April 24th.
And Dennis, for this clip, there's going to be a 15-second pause in the middle, but just keep it running. So the first thing we're going to listen to is we're going to listen to 28th Ward Alderman Jason Irvin, who represents the west side of Chicago. And he's representing this issue that I talked about earlier, this issue of ceding appropriation authority. And the first part of this clip is actually from the April 21st Budget Committee meeting, where Irvin is questioning Mayor Lightfoot's budget director, Susie Park. Let's listen to that.
$50 million of the $470 million that in the first round of CARES money, what is the plan for the other approximate $420 million that would remain specifically from that round of the CARES Act money, of which we have currently today in city bank accounts, $470 million.
The FEMA public assistance has definitely a period, and then anything thereafter, we're going to need that CARES money to help sustain us.
But again, you fully anticipate that there will be an excess potentially of $200 million that will be unspent and unobligated somewhere around the time where this ordinance is designed to close, which is June 30th. Is that a fair statement?
As of June 30th, there will be funds remaining that we will, have to, help support the response for the rest of the year.
I would say she didn't answer the question. Anyway, Irvin is saying that the ordinance potentially lets the administration decide how to spend $200 million left over from the federal funding. So then we're going to listen to at the city council meeting on April 24th.
The question that I think we have to ask ourselves today is, with the balance of the CARES Act money.
Sorry about that, Dave. I accidentally hit the button. Dave, are you there?
I'm still here.
Yeah, sorry about that. I accidentally hit the button there. I can edit that out.
There's more.
Oh, there was more? Oh, there was the 15
That's
seconds.
Right, so there was that 15-second pause.
Oh, my goodness. Dave, you're good, man. Okay, so let's just, I guess I'll play that again, because you were talking in between that time, huh?
Yeah.
Boy, that threw me for a loop. Okay.
Sorry.
Dude, you're good.
Well, let's listen again to Alderman Irvin's grilling of Budget Director Susie Park at the April 21st budget
meeting. All right, here we go. Sorry about that, Dave.
$50 million of the $470 million that in the first round of CARES money, what is the plan for the other approximate $420 million that would remain specifically from that round of the CARES Act money, of which we have currently today in city bank accounts, $470 million?
The FEMA public assistance has definitely a period, and then anything thereafter, we're going to need that CARES money to help sustain us.
But again, you fully anticipate that there will be an excess potentially of $200 million that will be unspent and unobligated somewhere around the time where this ordinance is designed to close, which is June 30th. Is that a fair statement?
As of June 30th, there will be funds remaining that we will, have to, help support the response for the rest of the year.
So Park is saying that there's probably going to be $200 million left over after the ordinance expires, and Irvin is saying, well, who's going to decide how to spend that? So he says it again at the city council meeting on April 24th.
The question that I think we have to ask ourselves today is, with the balance of the CARES Act money, $470 million, which is what we have today, what is it that we do with that money? As a council, I believe that we should have the ability to appropriate those dollars and that not be strictly an executive decision. the decision to put money toward technology for our public school children or to create hotspots or the ability for us to dedicate funds to rental or mortgage relief, all of these items are something that should be subject to debate and subject to a vote by this body. These are items that should not just unilaterally be determined by the executive branch. I do not want to go to the table as a beggar. My constituents didn't send me down here to be a beggar. So I would just ask, if we feel that it's okay to essentially give up our roles in directing where funds are going to be spent outside of the emergency, I mean, the after effects, the mortgage relief, the business relief, the technology needs, all of these are eligible expenses under the grant as stated on the website of the Department of Treasury. I believe that we should have not only a voice, but a vote in how those things are going to occur.
He's kind of channeling his inner preacher, Ben, I think.
Well, let me just take a moment to just set things out here for people. That's Jason Ervin. He's the alderman from the 28th Ward. And what a lot of the things we're going to hear in today's show, these clips, are aldermen who are adapting to what I would call new roles in the Chicago City Council. And so Jason Ervin has always been, well, when Rahm was mayor, he was a Rahm loyalist, and he generally voted Rahm's way. And he was not the kind of guy that would get up and give denunciations of too much power in the hands of the mayor. Now he finds himself playing a new role in the Lori Lightfoot administration. He's the head of the Black Caucus, the Caucus of Black Aldermen in the Chicago City Council. And many of the caucus members are irritated, to put it mildly, with what they think is a lack of response on the part of Lori Lightfoot to meeting the needs of their constituents, dividing up the pie in such a way that it's more equitably distributed to poor Black communities in the city of Chicago. And so over the last few months, Dave, Jason Ervin has found himself, like I said, in a new role. We first saw this in the reefer bill, the cannabis bill, where he was threatening to shut the whole thing down, delay legalization for about 6 months, unless the city made a more proactive effort to get Black vendors involved in the process. So it's a little bit new for me to hear Jason Ervin taking this role, but I have to say, I thought he did a great job there of articulating, explaining exactly what the issues are at stake.
And notice it's a very focused point that he's making just about this, you know, there's 200 mil going to be kicking around. We should have a say in spending that. And as we'll hear, there are other aldermen who make other points, but perhaps to his credit, he, like I said, he stays very focused on his objection, which makes it, you know, a little harder to argue with.
Yeah, and one more point about Jason Ervin. His wife, Melissa Conyers Ervin, is the treasurer. She was newly elected in this last round. And she's not been she's not afraid to speak up against Lori Lightfoot. So somewhere in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, is Melissa Conyers Ervin going to run for mayor? I don't know. I just, way in the back of my mind, I think about these things as I watch and listen to Alderman Irvin's new role.
Well, those of us who are longtime observers can't help but try to connect dots, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's what we do.
Dennis, we're going to do NITS next. And Ben, you mentioned a minute ago that Jason Ervin was in the forefront around the issue of equity for potential growers of cannabis, that we know that in Chicagoland and perhaps in Illinois, most of the, if not all of the operators of cannabis dispensaries were white guys. And Ervin was on the forefront of saying, hey, how come none of these people are Black? So the next person we're going to listen to addresses the equity issue around this ordinance, namely that some aldermen feel that the administration's pandemic-related expenditures to date, in terms of both products and services like, you know, personal protection equipment, and in terms of contractors, minority versus white contractors, that the administration's expenditures had neglected the hardest hit Black and brown communities in Chicago. So if they felt that if aldermen passed this ordinance that boosted the administration's spending power, it would exacerbate this disproportionate spending problem unless the ordinance had specific spending targets for these communities in question. But as I said, it did. So the clip we're going to listen to is from Alderman Emma Mitz of the 37th Ward on the west side, right next to Alderman Urban's ward. And again, she is speaking at the, not at the city council meeting, but at the April 21st budget committee meeting. And let's listen to her now.
I have to tell you, though, this is one time that I've probably been more frustrated with government. And it's been really sad because I hear so much of the coronavirus, and I know that we're in times that we haven't seen before. But our community is still relying on us to be transparent and to update them in every way. And all I hear is that how the virus is taking out Black folks. And I do know I was Black when I was born, and I'm Black today. And when I see dollars being spent, I think that they should be where it's needed the most, in the Black community. And that's what my community are saying. And when we have to not be transparent in the council between the legislative body and the executive body, I find problems there. Because government have always worked when we sit down and talk and work things out. I probably didn't want to say anything because when you're angry, you say the wrong thing. And I don't want to have to say the wrong thing, but I want to save people's lives. I want to be able to help where I can. But if we're going to have dollars being spent, we need to know where those dollars are going and having input and decision making. I've asked that we've had meetings with the chairmen of various committees so we can discuss these issues. And I don't like getting to the day of to try to work out issues when it can simply be worked out on the front end. So I'm frustrated as to why we're moving in a direction that says emergency Friday, and on Monday we have an ordinance that's been changed. Well, what's the emergency now? If we have all these emergency, I'm overwhelmed because I've got so many phone calls this morning. It means there'll be a 10 o'clock phone ringing. We should have taken care of this business before now. We are a body that can talk to one another. I'll leave my frustration and let my colleagues who wish to articulate their concerns. We have to do better moving forward. We have to do better in making sure that we're getting information from both the legislative body with the executive body so we can represent all the
Emma Mitz from the 37th Ward on the west side. And Dave, Emma Mitz, as you know, again, this is for our listeners, has generally been a loyalist to the mayor, very close ally of Rahm Emanuel. And she's not actually a dissident in the Lori Lightfoot regime either. So the fact that she was speaking out, it just shows you how tenuous the ground was for Lori Lightfoot as she came with this proposal to try to win over Black support. And let me just say, the city of Chicago has a horrible, and I mean horrible, record when it comes to equitably distributing its money. I've been writing about the TIF program for years. Dave Glowatz and I have been talking about the TIF program for years. There are many reasons to be upset with how the TIF program is administered in Chicago. But one of the, at the top of the list, or the top three anyway, I would say, is the fact that it's a program intended to help the poorest of the poor neighborhoods, and it largely goes to the richest of the rich. So this is the backdrop, Dave, when we talk essentially what is another TIF program, which is another mayoral-controlled fund of money. Some might even call it a slush fund, where the mayor is free to spend it as she wants. Now, this mayor, Mayor Lori Lightfoot, has sworn up and down that she's going to do everything she can to make sure that the inequities of the past, which saw all that TIF money go to wealthier, gentrifying Northside communities, be spread out a little more equitably. But that's the backdrop that they're having this discussion about this new pot of money. So that's why I could sense the frustration even for a mayoral loyalist like Emma Mitz.
one of the things that perhaps stirs Alderman Mitch is the fact that this is this inequity now is killing people. She uses the word, the virus is taking out Black folks, whereas in the past, the economic disparity that you were talking about, Ben, in terms of tax income and financing districts, you know, it's certainly noticeable. If you travel around Emma Mitz's ward in Austin, you'll see a lot of empty storefronts and disinvestment, but it's not clear, you know, who's to blame for that. But when, you know, this virus comes and sweeps through her community, then, you know, that kind of gets your attention. And I don't know if you or your listeners could hear it in her voice, but she sounds angry and sad. And she even says that she's being careful because when people are angry, they say things they shouldn't say. Mm-hmm. But she said that she needs to save lives, and she's not sure that the mayoral message of needing this power to address an emergency is a valid one, because she said, where is the emergency if we're given the final ordinance? And this is what happened. They were given, the aldermen were given final language on the ordinance the same day that they were to vote on it in the budget committee on April 21st. And some aldermen thought that was not cool. So she talks about how frustrated she is. But I have to note that she voted yes.
I was going
to
say, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Full city council meeting on the ordinance. Yeah.
Push come to shove. Emma Mitz, it's going to take a lot for her to break with the mayor. And she voted yes. So, all right, what's your next clip?
Dennis, we're going to do Rosa next. Yeah, Ben, even so, it really invites the question that you and I have talked about before. What did the administration have to do to get her vote? We don't know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, did they have to do anything, you know? It's an interesting question that I wish we had the answer to, and perhaps some investigating journalists will find that out. But someone who did not vote for the emergency powers ordinance was Alderman Carlos Ramirez Rosa of the 35th Ward, which is in the northwest side. Logan Square is a big part of his area, and let's hear what he had to say.
In response to our attempts to amend this ordinance to include an equity lens, we have been told to trust this mayor. I must remind my colleagues that in this nation, policymakers put their trust in laws, not people. At the federal level, we have seen the disastrous effects of policies that put their trust in one sole executive. And here in Chicago, we have seen the disastrous effects of when we trust the mayor to be Chicago's sole decision maker and authority. Mayor Lightfoot has unilateral control of our schools, and teachers had to go on strike for 11 days to win basic necessities for our children, like nurses. Mayor Lightfoot has unilateral control over the issuance of demolition permits, and we have seen what happened with Hilco, where a failure in this administration's demolition oversight left Little Village residents covered in debris and dust. As Chicago's teachers, parents, and students learned just months ago, when it comes to this mayor, you have to put it in writing. And so we have sought to put into writing guarantees that an equity lens will be applied to federal emergency dollars. That reasonable request was maligned, ignored, and dismissed. The other night, Carol Marine said this power grab is reminiscent of Emanuel and Daley, and that caucus pushback and council pushback was rational. Mike Dumpke said that we are elected officials, and that what we are saying is, this is supposed to be a democracy. This is supposed to be good government. That's something that this mayor campaigned on. There has been a mistruth that has been said about this ordinance. It's been said that it's needed in order to buy PPE expeditiously. Multiple municipal procurement experts, as well as the legal counsel of the city council at the budget committee, made it very clear that that is simply false. The mayor has the power that she has right now to procure PPE. She's been doing it. So to say that this ordinance and not voting for it is somehow blocking PPE to the hardest hit communities and to our health professionals is a lie. It was a lie created at the last minute to try and push this forward. I urge my colleagues to vote no. I urge my colleagues to say yes to equity, true oversight, for us to do our jobs and not abdicate our responsibility to meet as a council to have oversight over this city's purse.
That's Alderman Carlos Ramirez Rosa, 35th Ward. He's been on the show many times, probably be on the show real soon. He was elected in 2015 as an independent, as somebody who would stand up to then Mayor Rahm on issues of how we distribute money throughout the city. He's a Democratic Socialist. He's a Bernie Sanders supporter. He supported Tony Preckwinkle in the race against Lori Lightfoot. Dave, I think we have to mention that. As such, he was one of the more upfront voices championing Tony Preckwinkle. Lori Lightfoot, of course, defeated Tony like 75% of the vote. It was a landslide. And so in many ways, she started off on a rough spot with Lori Lightfoot, who's shown she doesn't really tolerate, have a lot of tolerance, Dave, for aldermen who criticize her. And we've had him on the show. Carlos has always been very diplomatic in what he has to say regarding Lori Lightfoot. I'm always pushing him. Doug, come on, what do you really think? And he kind of holds back, but he was not holding back on that point. He was making his position very clear that you got to put it in writing. A lesson learned, he said, from the Chicago teacher strike. Got to put it in writing. Teachers went on strike to force Mayor Lightfoot to put it in writing to hire more nurses. Boy, does that seem like ancient history, huh, Dave? So a very forceful, passionate speech from Carlos. Go ahead, Dave.
This idea of him not holding back, that's one of the things that struck me about his comments when you compare them to the other clips we've listened to where the aldermen who spoke before were very careful not to make what some might call ad hominem attacks against the mayor to keep it on a sort of factual level. And he arguably is not trying to be diplomatic. And I don't know if he's going to win any hearts and minds in the administration.
No.
By going that way.
No,
he's nor does he seem concerned with winning hearts and minds.
Yeah. He's essentially asserting a point of view that I hear from a lot of activists with the Chicago Teachers Union. And that is that when you deal with any powerful mayor, and Lori Lightfoot would be no different than a Rahm Emanuel, you have to get that mayor to back up his or her commitments in writing, in a contract. And so turning over this kind of authority to the mayor, you lose all leverage. Any leverage you would have on the mayor to do the right thing. Now, Lori Lightfoot would argue that you could expect her to do the right thing because she's as much a progressive as Carlos. That's what she would say. But that's the terms of the debate. Will Lori Lightfoot do the right thing with this money if the city council does not have a leverage over her?
Dennis, we're going to do Sig Show next. Yeah, Ben, I guess I was addressing the question of style, like, you know, the old saying, when they go low, we go high. Alderman Rosa doesn't seem to be concerned with pissing off the mayor because I guess we're already there.
Yes.
So another opponent of the emergency powers ordinance that we're going to listen to was Alderman Byron Sigcho Lopez, who is of the 25th Ward on the near south side, and whose ward includes Pilsen and Chinatown. And let's listen to what he had to say.
I heard from my colleagues about the importance of co-governance, and this is not co-governance. For way too long, we have had a city that was dominated by the elites, by corporations and developers. Those are the same actors that want to continue to run the city without accountability, leaving behind people of color, Black and brown communities that today are suffering. You all know the necessities of Black communities who have been disproportionately affected by this virus, this pandemic, undocumented residents that are yet to receive necessary support, families are suffering from hunger, cannot pay the rents, they cannot afford their mortgages, and they need answers. This is the time that we come together. This is the time that we govern with integrity, with responsibility, with unity. The people of Chicago did not vote for unilateral decisions. They voted for accountability and transparency. We cannot go back to the times where there were one mayor overseeing everything and a rubber stamp council. We can no longer go back to those times when unilateral decisions imposed a horrific parking meter system, that privatized our parking system and disproportionately affect people of color. The last thing I'd like to say is that on April 19th, we also sent a letter with amendments that we wanted to consider. I welcome my colleagues who have been pushing for more amendments that only happened after the council mobilized, that we're able to get some amendments for a sunset date to make sure that we don't let companies to contract without economic disclosure statements. By the way, we still not have gotten a response on those amendments. And that's the reason why I urge you to vote no, to vote to make sure that we have co-governance. This is not the time to leave blank checks to anyone. And this is a matter of issues. This is not personal. We can no longer continue with these personal attacks when something doesn't go our way. This is the time to be the leaders and lead by example. This is the time for compassion, for collaboration, and co-governance.
But that is Alderman Byron Sixel Lopez, 25th Ward. And I just
plays the parking meter card, doesn't he?
Yes, he plays the parking meter card. And for a long time, listeners to the Ben Jarofsky Show, you're probably thinking, wait a minute, isn't that Laureen Targo's husband? Yes, it is. One of our favorite guests, Laureen Targo, EPA scientist, activist, and political strategist. And yes, she is. He is married to Laureen. So yes, and they've been on the show together a couple times, Dave. So that's why some of our listeners might know him. Unspoken in what he's saying, it's interesting how the switch has been flipped, Dave. You and I have had this discussion slash debate for a long time. Yes, Lori Lightfoot was elected on a platform of reform, but bizarrely, in my humble opinion, one of the chief reforms that she was promoting, and one that was embraced by virtually everybody in the city of Chicago except for me, was this notion that the great plague hurting our city was aldermanic prerogative, in which aldermen were the kings or queens of zoning and land use in their wards. I've always thought that was a myth. I thought that was completely exaggerated and distorted and successfully used by Lori Lightfoot to gain even more power. And so effectively, Lori Lightfoot is arguing that in part, when she gives herself more power, more authority, she's reforming Chicago. It's an upside-down argument. It's counterintuitive. But listen, so many Chicagoans signed on to the aldermanic prerogative nonsense that, to a certain degree, she's able to get away with it.
And I must say that during the city council debate on April 24th, which we're listening to, those words did not come up, aldermanic prerogative. That the larger issue of sort of the purview of the legislative branch versus the purview of the executive branch is the fundamental issue that aldermen were arguing about. And certainly, as you say, the aldermanic prerogative issue is in that landscape, but I think aldermen at the city council meeting were arguing a more fundamental thing. And I want to point out that in his remarks, Alderman Sixel Lopez said that he thought personal attacks in this realm should stop. And I wasn't clear, and I'm still not clear, since he spoke after Alderman Rosa, who, as I said, was not holding back with saying this and that about the mayor personally. Was he talking about Rosa, or was he talking about Lightfoot in terms of personal attacks? And I say that because after Alderman did this thing, Rosa and four other aldermen did this parliamentary maneuver on the first city council, the first attempt at a city council meeting on April 22nd, Mayor Lightfoot went into a press conference where she attacked the five aldermen who caused her to recess the meeting. And I'll just quote what was reported. She said in her conference, she said, quote, "Dear Lord, in the middle of a pandemic where everyday life and death are hanging in the balance, enough with the selfish political stunts." And she was talking about this move by the five aldermen to essentially say, we move to do what's called defer and publish this ordinance when it came up for a vote. And when that's done, that means that the vote automatically, the move, whatever's being proposed, automatically gets delayed till the next city council meeting. And so the mayor decided to call the next city council meeting, which has to be a minimum of 48 hours later. And so that's what she did. Anyway, she called Rosa's moves embarrassing. So again, I'm not sure whether other than Sucho Lopez, when he was saying we must stop the personal attacks, I don't know who he was talking about. It could have gone either way.
My guess, again, if I had to put money in Vegas, I haven't talked to Byron in a while, but I guess he was directing his comments at Lori Lightfoot. And he and Lori Lightfoot have gotten into this in the past a little bit. If you recall, Lori Lightfoot made some remarks that someone could interpret as disparaging regarding development in Pilsen, and saying it's a better, stronger neighborhood than it was before the gentrification really kicked in. She made those remarks, I think it was in New York. And by chance, Byron was on my show, right? The day after, Dave, it was just by happenstance. And so he was critical of those remarks. And he had some back and forth with Lori Lightfoot and aides and advisors to Lori Lightfoot. So he's experienced Lori's wrath. This is something I concentrate on my story. Lori Lightfoot is really starting to remind me in many ways, not so much of Rahm, but of Richard M. Daley. That would be the mayor before Rahm for youngsters out there. And Dave, when we first started doing our podcast together, he was the mayor. We did our podcast for 4 years under Daley. Isn't that something? That's how long we've been talking about politics together.
There was no shortage. That was what I would call a target-rich environment.
Yeah, there was a lot of material. And he had an explosive temper. And he did not have much patience with people who dared to criticize his program. And he would be known to go off on aldermen from time to time. And it's just a sort of similarity in styles between Lori Lightfoot and Richard M. Daley. And this is a classic, by the way, what Lori Lightfoot, the card she played that you were talking to talk about the seriousness of the pandemic and to sort of diminish or marginalize or trivialize the counterpoints raised by Ramirez, Rosa, and Irvin as saying they're trivializing the matter and they're endangering lives. It's not that unsimilar to what J.B. Pritzker did today. When his press conference, when he was responding to the lawsuit by State Representative Bailey that challenged his ability to issue a statewide order commanding people to stay in their homes and not go to their businesses. In times of crises, presidents, governors, and mayors are not afraid to paint their opponents as sort of dangerous people who are hurting the public good.
Dennis, we're going to do Smith next. Yeah, Ben, it's almost, in the toolbox, it's almost foolish for someone in their position to overlook that tool. Yeah. It's the obvious one to use, right?
Absolutely.
And I want to mention one more thing that Alderman Sergio Lopez talked about, is he said that he and others sent a letter to the administration, the proposed amendments to the emergency powers ordinance. And he said there was no response. But there was one thing that evidently the administration did change in between the draft of the ordinance and the final version that was handed out or that was approved. I talked earlier about this, economic disclosure statement that the ordinance says that contractors can delay submitting for up to 2 months. Well, in the original version, the draft version, which I got my hands on, it said they didn't have to file them at all. So that was something that Sergio Lopez and others got the administration to do. Next, we're going to listen to someone who actually voted for the ordinance, but this is Alderman Michelle Smith of the 43rd Ward, who represents Lincoln Park. And when she was talking about this ordinance in the April 21st Budget Committee meeting, she addressed the issue of why would what's the big deal of allowing the council to have a say in pandemic related legislation? And she was asking this of the administration's representatives. And let's hear what she had to say at that meeting.
What impediments do you see, if any, to allowing the decisions that are being made now under this ordinance to be put up for ratification at the next regularly scheduled meeting of City Council? Why couldn't we provide that these decisions that the city is making, if they were otherwise subject to City Council approval in a non-emergency, be subject to some sort of a ratification vote?
I know you're asking your question generally and using the EDS as an example. At least looking at that, I can tell you that the purpose of that provision is a bit of a safety net, because as I understand it, the city has been able to collect 90% plus of EDSs in a timely manner, just as if we were doing it the usual way. So I think provisions like that simply vest the party charged with administering it with the ability to provide a little flexibility. And I think what you're suggesting might run the risk of bringing a whole bunch of small kind of administrative speed bumps before the city council on a regular basis.
What would be the legal obstacles in your view of requiring the city's decisions, which are largely purchasing decisions, to be put up for ratification before city council? Are there legal issues with that?
I would need to think a little more closely on that. Nothing jumps out at me, but what I can say is that this ordinance in itself serves as the ratification, just on a less granular level than you are speaking to.
Okay. Well, thank you for that answer.
Yeah, that's her
sound. Alderman.
Yeah, go ahead, Dave.
The person Alder Smith is talking with is Deputy Corporation Counsel Jeff Levine. Mm-hmm. And he says the word EDS, which is what I was talking about earlier, the economic disclosure statements. He essentially dodged her question when she asked what would keep the administration from going to the city council on what are essentially purchasing decisions. Mm-hmm. But then later on, he says, well, you know, there are things that we need to do quickly, which has been the persistent argument for why the council needs this. And you know, you raised this question earlier, Ben, is like, you can't figure out why the administration is pushing this. Why, you know, why does it need this power, which when the city council can now, thanks to video conferencing, can meet, you know, within 24 hours if needed to approve something. And I want to point out that this fellow, Jeff Levine, he's also deputy corporation counsel during the Emanuel administration. And as someone who has gone to many, many city council meetings and budget committee meetings, he is often the person that is sitting advising the committee chairs and sometimes the mayor when the pesky aldermen start to question things. He's sort of like the administration whisperer, perhaps you want to call it. And so he's the guy who was in this budget committee meeting making that point, or defending that point, that we need to be nimble on these emergency expenditures.
Yeah, no, I know exactly the role he played. I love, this is one of my favorite part of any hearing, where the lawyer leans over and whispers into the ear of the alderman, and straight out of The Godfather 2, by the way, where Robert Duvall would be whispering into the ear of Michael Corleone. Not saying that the people who run our city of Chicago are mobsters, just saying the whisperer at a hearing is something that a lot of people link to that movie. Yeah, listen. This is their claim. They have to be able to just write that check, boom, on a moment's notice, without worrying about the Chicago City Council, and without having to explain why they're writing the check. at that moment, to who they're writing the check to, whether it conforms with all the rules and the regulation governing the writing of the checks. This is a pandemic. This is an emergency. Lives are at stake. So the rules are out the window. And anybody who says we have to adhere to the old rules, anybody who says that the city council warrants a say in the matter to make sure that the funds are being equitably distributed is endangering the livelihood of Chicagoans. So shut up and give the mayor the power. That's essentially the argument they're making, Dave. But I said it a little more forcefully than they did.
Well, I think perhaps Alderman Rosa might agree with that. And there are some aldermen who react very strongly to being told to shut up. And Dennis, we're going to do Lopez next.
That's our last one. Raymond Lopez. Yeah.
And this is where we depart a little bit from talking about perhaps government and legislative operations and just talk about how a particular alderman, namely Alderman Ray Lopez of the 15th Ward, which is near Englewood and the adjoining parts of the south side, what is the back of the yards, is the neighborhood that I'm trying to think of, back of the yards. He, at the end of the meeting, just raised, after all the other business had been done, he raised what he called a point of personal privilege. And let's listen what, this is an exchange between him and the mayor. Let's listen to that.
In accordance with Rule 13, I'd like to invoke my right for personal privilege at this time.
What is the nature of your motion, sir?
As it states in the rules, this allows me the opportunity to discuss when matters of a member's integrity, character, or motives have been assailed, questioned, or impugned, and I wish to address that matter at this time.
And sir, during the course of this proceeding, how has your integrity been assailed?
Madam President, that is not up for debate. It is my right per our rules and procedure to invoke this at this time.
I believe that you have to have a basis within the confines of this meeting, and you have to articulate that. Otherwise, I'm going to rule your motion out of order.
It is not according to our rules. As I quote, the right of a member to address the council on a question of personal privilege shall be limited to cases in which his integrity, character, or motives are assailed, questioned, or impugned. It does not state it has to be in this meeting. It has to be on topic of which I have a topic. So I am invoking my right to address that here in this body, because my reputation, as well as the reputation and character of several members of this body, have been impugned, and I demand my right per our rules to address this matter publicly.
That's Alderman Austin. I'm questioning in regards to Alderman Lopez, in regards to he and several others' rights being impugned, but were they done in this body?
And I believe that based upon the previous question I asked, the answer was no.
And the rules do not require it to be as such, Madam President. It does not state that it has to be in chamber, which is why
Alderman Lopez, I'm going to roll you out of order.
Then I appeal the decision of the chair to the body.
And that went to a roll call vote, which he lost. And so what he's talking about is what Ben, you and I were talking about earlier, that these five aldermen who deferred and published the emergency powers ordinance that caused the mayor to delay the council meeting for 2 days. And then she called them selfish.
Yeah.
He's reacting to that. I think that he didn't actually ever get to say it because he wasn't allowed to make his speech. But we're pretty sure that's what he was talking about. Yeah. The mayor's comments about those aldermen.
Yeah. I got to tell you, I'm all over the map with this one. On one hand, I know. I've written so many columns critical of Chicago politicians down through the years, and then I get ripped. You know what I'm saying? Like the commentators, that they weigh in and they make all kinds of say all kinds of mean, nasty things about me. But Dave, that's what, you know, if you're going to put up, if you're going to give it out, you got to take it to a certain degree. There's some lines that get crossed and it's dangerous, but by and large, you just got to let it play. So
well, it's interesting that the dynamic has changed thanks to this video conferencing thing. Arguably, this kind of exchange would not have been, it would have been possible, but I don't think it would have developed in that way if they were in council chamber. This video conferencing allows this sort of
Because when someone starts talking, their image takes over the screen,
yeah,
and it has a presence. My point is, it's a dynamic that's very, yeah, different from the last city council.
Well, he could have raised it at the council. But my point, let me finish my point. It's like, so, you know, he says things, mean nasty things about Lori Lightfoot. She says mean nasty things about him. That's fair game for politics in Chicago. So I'm like, yeah. But, you know, I believe she should have let him talk and put it out there, because one of the, as I said, one of the developing traits about life, the way Lori Lightfoot deals with her opponents, is she's not afraid to trash them. And so he's saying, let's talk about it. And what does she do? She does a virtual Mayor Daley. And the old man, Mayor Daley, would turn off your microphone. That ends that. And then, it's so ironic, one of her big allies is Dick Simpson, who used to be a liberal alderman from the north side of Chicago. But back in the day, I remember Daley, Simpson was railing against Mayor Richard J. Daley, old man Daley, and Daley had the sergeant of arms force him into his chair. So, you know, it's sort of like a virtual play on that where, you know, she denies him his right to raise the issue he wants to raise. She rules him out of order. So she's got the authority, Dave, because she's the chair of the meeting, to cut off conversation and discussion that might, you know, shed light on maybe her inappropriate behavior in the way she treats aldermen. And they voted with her. So I guess that was indicative of how the vote was going to go. Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
There's an element, what you just said, they voted with her, meaning the other aldermen. That means that there's an element of democracy present here that wasn't present when old man Daley would shut off somebody's microphone. In this case, Lopez, knowing the rules of the city council, he said, I appeal the decision of the chair, which, yeah, means it automatically goes to a vote. And of course, it was a very lopsided vote. It wasn't even close on whether to shut him down.
Well, you know,
but there was a vote.
There was a vote. And let's put it this way. I was talking about this with Ken Davis, and he was talking about hills that you're going to die on. All these aldermen, just folks, if anybody believes aldermanic prerogative is real in the city of Chicago, here it is. One alderman appealing to all his aldermanic brothers and sisters, come to my aid as the big bad mayor maligns me, vote with me so I could address the mayor. And they go, nope, we're sticking with the mayor. So it just shows you where all the power lies, Dave. The power
is...
Yeah,
but, you know, I want to push back on that a little bit because, mind you, this is at the end of the meeting, and they're sitting there for hours talking about substantive issues. And, you know, everybody knows that... I'm going to withdraw that remark. there is a certain amount of, I'm kind of done, you know, yeah, attitude at this point, And everybody gets it. He already kind of said enough that everybody gets what's going to come next. And if I was an alderman, I'd be more interested in
going home,
listening to something more substantive.
Going home. It's at the end of the meeting. I want to go home. All right, I'll put it to you this way. We're going to make one.
And they already are home.
Yeah, it's true. Turning it off and watching Last Dance. I want to watch the Bulls documentary. All right, they are already home. I'll put it to you this way, but we'll never be able to know this. Would the vote have been any different had it been the first matter on the agenda? And the answer is no, a resounding no. I put it.
Well, I'm not saying that they were impatient to get off the call. I'm saying that there's enough going on that needs careful attention. This would not be high on my list of one of those things.
All right, fair enough. Now, let's get down to that's it. We've played all our bits that you dutifully collected for us. Thank you very much. So now we're getting to that moment we've been waiting for. Dave Coats is going to have a big decision to make. Everybody that comes on this show is asked, how would you vote if you were in the city council? I already said I would have voted no. I would have voted against the mayor, giving the mayor the authority. Kenny Davis, my dear friend, said he would have voted with the mayor. He didn't think that would be the hill worth dying on. Peter P.C. Cunningham said he would have voted with the mayor. He generally thinks mayors should have this kind of authority. So, Dave Glowatz, how would you have voted?
I think I'm going to duck and dodge on this one because, you know, being a journalist who has this deep city council reporting,
yeah.
I don't think it's my place to say this is my position on matters of policy and governance.
Fair enough.
But having said that, yeah. I'll say that you know how I would have voted.
Sure do. The old Dave Glowatz used to interview me, man. This guy was left of left. But no, I respect this new position you have. And yes, keep it to yourself. And don't let anybody.
Just between you and
That's correct.
All right. Dave, this is a blast. I love doing these city council bits with you, and keep up the good work, and we'll do another one, I don't know, next month, all right?
Oh, I forgot there's one more question that I think is one of the most important questions I could have.
What's that?
Can you hook me up with a haircut?
Yeah, I happen to know somebody who cuts hair, but she's respecting the restrictions that Governor Pritzker and Mayor Lightfoot have imposed, so you're going to have to wait a while, like everyone else. I think even Mayor Lightfoot's not getting haircuts anymore. Am I correct?
All right. All right.
Well, she's not going to, certainly not going to let people take photos of it.
I see. Yeah. All right, Dave Glowatz, you take care, and we'll talk to you real soon, all right?
It's been a pleasure.
That's great, Dave Glowatz. I'm Ben Jarofsky. Take care, everyone.